Good morning. I'm Donna Eco, board member of Next Generation Choices Foundation, more commonly known as Less Cancer. And it's my privilege and pleasure to again interview Don Beyer, congressman from Virginia, and a great advocate for healthcare for not only his own constituents, but also for the Americans all over. Great to see you. Thank you for helping us at the National Cancer Prevention Workshop. This year, we are really focusing on cancer and health disparities. And I know that these can be in the context of race, ethnicity, age, sexual identity, education, so many types of disparities. And we wanted to know about things you might be working on that can help address some of the unequal accesses to healthcare.
Great. Well, Donna, thanks so much for inviting me back again. I love our conversations, and I'm so grateful to you for your years and years of leadership on Less Cancer. You're making a big difference. Just quick overview, 33% drop in cancer mortality since 1991. And if you do the math, that's almost 4 million deaths prevented, largely driven by progress against the four most common cancer types: lung, colorectal, breast, and prostate, which is really, really exciting. I have a friend who is a colorectal surgeon, and he said he's not operating on a lot of older people anymore because so many people are getting the colonoscopies, even if it's only 60%, that he's seeing less and less of it. But I was amazed just this last week that they reported a 65% reduction in cervical cancer rates among young women, 20 to 24, in the years from 2012 to 2019. That was the HPV vaccine. I know it was a little controversial at first. I remember when Tim Kaine was our governor and really tried to mandate it for every teenage girl and increasingly teenage boys. We got our girls done at 13. And oh my God, what a huge difference it makes. I'm a little concerned because the importance of tackling cancer is through not just behavioral changes, but vaccination to prevent infection is proven to be really, really important. But at the same time, we're getting this vaccine pushback as a result of COVID and people not vaccinating their kids for measles, for example, and pulling back. So I'm hoping that the current anti-vaccine misinformation hysteria is short-lived, because we have such an opportunity to make a difference on cancer with vaccinations that we need to push forward. And that's especially true because the EBV and RSV vaccines are supposed to be coming very soon. But to pivot, Donna, to your concern about disparity, let me go close to home for prostate cancer. It's the second leading cause of cancer death for men. And it increased 3% per year, which is not a lot, but 3% per year means that it doubles in 24 years from 2014 to 2019. It had been going down for two whole decades, and now it's on its way back up. And it's specifically growing in its most serious, advanced disease. But to the disparity, Black men are 70% more likely to get prostate cancer than white men. Their cancer mortality rate is 2 to 4 times greater than white men, than any other racial or ethnic group. So we clearly, right there, smacking us in the face, is this issue of disparity among Black men and prostate cancer. I introduced a bill with, and not just me, but I was the lead on it, the Addressing COVID-19 Health Disparities Act, which is specifically about the disparate impact on COVID response. We saw some communities were being hit harder and we could improve our healthcare delivery. And we always know that social determinants of health are a contributing factor. Poor nutrition, poor education, poor access to healthcare. And that in general, people of color are less likely to receive high quality healthcare even than white people, even when health insurance status, age, severity, disease, all that are comparable. Ayanna Pressley, who's a member of Congress from Boston, she and I led a letter to the CDC to collect the demographic data on long COVID, just to look and see what are the disparities there in terms of the You know, New York Times says 7 to 21 million people affected by long COVID. I think CDC says 2 to 3 million are not working, you know, just are out of the labor force because of long COVID. And understanding these disparities will help a lot more. But one more thing. I introduced the Improving Diagnosis in Medicine Act late last year. I did it with Kim Schreier, who's a pediatrician from Washington State, because it's one of the things we're discovering is that diagnostic errors, just figuring out the wrong disease, 12 million Americans annually, and about 10% of patient deaths where we're just treating the wrong thing. And from a cost standpoint, you know, we're always trying to bring down the cost of Medicare, Medicaid, our health insurance. Just misdiagnosis is $100 billion annually. So a lot of different reasons for it, breakdowns in communication, coordinating care, reading the wrong chart. I love it when I go in for something and they try again and again to make sure this is the left leg and this is the right leg, you know, writing which hand's going to be operated on and which hand's not going to be operated on. But test results can get lost, and especially in a lot of underserved areas, the subspecialty consultation that you need may not be available, or you don't have the test equipment, or it's malfunctioning. So this whole idea of Improving Diagnostics in Medicine Act creates a new grant program for establishing these research centers of diagnostic excellence. You know, I'm the only certified auto mechanic in Congress, I think. And Donna, so much of fixing a car is trying to get the right diagnostic process at every time. And human bodies are so much more complicated by factors of hundreds of thousands than a simple car. So I really look forward to reintroducing the bill. I'll stop, I'll pause, but let me just say that if you think that disparity is a big issue with COVID, just think what it is with all these different kinds of cancers that are out there.
Exactly. Well, Don, you have made all my points and answered most of my questions, which is wonderful. Maybe you could give me just a general overview of kind of where you're saying, you know, we have a new Congress. Obviously, we've all been riveted watching all the drama around that, but everybody is seated now. And I just wondered if you think there is an appetite in the new Congress for looking at some of these health issues. I mean, it seems to me that this would be one area where you could get some bipartisan consensus. I mean, everybody's constituents have these same problems. And I'm wondering if you see that as an area where you might be able to work with the other side and there might be some middle ground and some hope that we can on these attacks.
I should hope so, because the other side, you know, they get cancer too. And it affects their families. In fact, one of the missing Republicans during the Kevin McCarthy vote series had to go home because one of the family members had a cancer diagnosis. You know, and happily they're able to get back to, happily for them, they're able to get back and vote.
Yeah.
I'm cautiously optimistic. Well, I'm really optimistic when you think that we passed the CHIPS and Science Act last year. And most people focus on the $50 billion for new semiconductor chip manufacturer around the country. But the missing part is we basically doubled the National Science Foundation budget and also a huge increase to the NIH budget. And that we know that our ability to solve all these diseases comes about because we're investing in basic science. And so that's going to be paying dividends for years to come. And that wasn't really bipartisan in the House, but it was very bipartisan in the Senate. But we did pick up some Republican votes. The things like, you know, in the Inflation Reduction Act, we capped Medicare insulin at $35, which is wonderful. The bad news is there are people that aren't on Medicare that may still pay $800 a month for insulin, but we've moved in the right direction in a big way. And hopefully when that becomes accepted as the standard $35 a month limit for insulin, we got almost 70 million Americans that are pre-diabetic right now. You know, 20 or 25% of Medicare costs are just end-stage renal disease, you know, dialysis for basically diabetes patients. It's an enormous sadness and tragedy, but also opportunity for us to move forward. But the real challenge, Donna, no surprise, is that through the pandemic and the latter part of the Trump administration, our budget deficit, public debt, total national debt surged from like 19 trillion to 31 trillion. And we're all, no one really knows how much debt we can run up without having it affect us in a really negative way. But we all think, there's an old Herb Stein line, who used to be chair of the Council of Economic Advisors, that if something's too good to be true, it's not true. And so my Republican colleagues are understandably going to try to figure out, how do you rein in overall costs? How do you reduce the cost curve? And while they're trying to do that, it's difficult to expand other benefits. Now, the weird part is that the more effective our healthcare is, the less we end up spending on Medicare and Medicaid. Imagine if we didn't have all that type 2 diabetes. That would be an enormous impact. In fact, there's a lot of really interesting studies that the when you move Medicare eligibility down from 65, it actually saves you money, because then they're less sick when they get to be 65, and the costs start to get great. You know, the earlier you start to provide care, the more likely they are to be healthier longer.
Yeah. Well, and that very much goes to what we're talking about today, the importance of solving some of the health disparities in order to have, you know, not only less cancer, but general health improvement overall. I want to thank you so much for your leadership in so many areas, but particularly in looking at science and looking at medical issues and helping us reduce the incidence of cancer and health disparities. And so grateful for all you've done and your leadership, and especially your support of Less Cancer, especially today on National Cancer Prevention Workshop. Thank you.
Thank you, Don. And thank you for your leadership. I'm so pleased that you're changing the way the world works for those of us, all of us, who face the risk of cancer.